Bible is God's story. It is also our story. Today we hear the story about a man who wrestles with God and limps away a changed person. We heard the beginning of God's story a couple of weeks ago when God created a garden called Eden and then a man and a woman and placed them in that garden. The couple disobeyed God's command and were expelled when sin entered their story. To quote the famous Puritan poet John Milton, paradise was lost. But as we read last week when we gathered in the social hall for our casual worship, God stays in the story. God calls a middle-aged couple, Abram and Sarai, and sends them on a faith journey with three promises: the promise of land, the promise of descendants, and the promise that they will be blessed to be a blessing for every family on earth. We heard about the three visitors who were treated with lavish hospitality by Abram, and how Sarah laughed to herself when she overheard one of the strangers predicting that despite her advanced age, she would have a son in due season. True to the promise, Sarah gives birth to a son, Isaac, whose name in Hebrew means laughter. Before getting to our assigned narrative lectionary reading for this 15th Sunday after Pentecost, it would be good for us to reacquaint ourselves with the backstory of Jacob and Esau. Isaac being the only son of Abraham and Sarah, and the carrier of God's blessing for the next generation, he reaches manhood and marries a woman approved by his parents. Her name was Rebekah. Like Sarah, Rebekah turns out to be barren. Unlike Abraham, Isaac's prayer to God for a child is answered, not with one child, but with two fraternal twin boys. The first comes out red and hairy, so he's named Esau, which means in Hebrew, hairy. The second tumbles out holding on to his brother's heel, so they name him Jacob, which means heel grabber. Jacob's name has another minor meaning: he who deceives. While it is doubtful that this meaning was intended by his parents, as the story goes on, we will see the second definition aptly fits Jacob's character. It could be said that deep-seated family hostilities characterize Jacob's life. This was a dysfunctional family that you would read in psychology books. Because Isaac and Rebekah played favorites, Jacob and Esau grew up hating each other. He also swindled his brother Esau of his family's birthright, which entitled him to a double share of the family inheritance. Later, Jacob and his mother lied and connived to swindle the family blessing from Jacob's blind father, Isaac. When Esau discovered what has happened, he threatens to kill his brother, Jacob. So Jacob, when the tensions become high and conflict is near, does what he always does. He splits the scene. So he flees to Rebekah's brother, his uncle Laban, to the very place, Haran, where his great-grandfather Abraham left many years ago. So Jacob marries his cousins, Leah and Rachel, and eventually fathers 11 children. Sick and tired of his father-in-law Laban's manipulation, Jacob concocts a plan to escape him, and he does so with his prized cattle and lambs and flock. After 20 years of living as a fugitive, Jacob decides it's time to come home. He'll be returning home, a rich man with a large family. But there's one obstacle still facing him. Esau, his long-lost and embittered brother, who, the last time he encountered him, threatened to kill him. When Jacob's tribe arrives at the Jabbok River, Jacob splits his caravan and family and sends them across the river while he remains behind to keep the darkness company for what might be the last night of his life. Come tomorrow, Esau might strike him dead on the spot. Of course, as the story has it, it is, in a very real sense, the last night of Jacob's life. But not because of Esau. Someone else will get to Jacob first. As we have already experienced by our readings from Genesis, the Hebrews were master storytellers. And like any good storyteller, they don't tell all. Instead, we are invited to enter the story, to fill the gaps with our own imaginations and life experiences. We are invited to wonder what it is like for Jacob to wrestle so intimately with God, a wrestling match which will last almost till dawn. This morning, I want to encourage you and to help you use your imaginations and enter into the story by sharing with you one of my favorite storytellers, a writer who has a knack for filling in the gaps. His name is Frederick Buechner. Those of you who attended the adult forum during Lent got a chance to meet Frederick Buechner. What I am about to share you comes from his book titled Son of Laughter, The Story of Jacob. Buechner writes, believe it or not, well, not yet he writes, believe it or not, I first heard this story from the lips of Buechner himself, who read it from the pages of a yet unpublished manuscript from a pulpit of the Manchester Baptist Church across the street from the North End bookstore, where I would later have the pleasure of meeting the author and having him sign one of the books of his that I was reading during our vacation to Vermont that year. What happened that night by the river? If Jacob were here to speak for himself, perhaps he would tell a story somewhat like this. Our bodies were slippery with mud. We were panting like beasts. We could not see each other. We spoke no words. I did not know why we were fighting. It was like fighting in a dream. He outweighed me. He out-wrestled me. But he did not overpower me. He did not overpower me until the moment came to overpower me. When the moment came, I knew that he could have made it come whenever he wanted. He struck my joint. Then he crippled me. I could do nothing but cling now. I clung for dear life. I clung for dear death. Let me go, he said, for the day is breaking. The words were more breath than sounds. They scalded my neck where his mouth was touching. I would not let him go for fear that the day would take him as the night had given him. Bless me, I said. I will not let you go unless you bless me. Even if this blessing meant death, I wanted it more than life. He said, who are you? There was mud in my eyes, my ears, my nostrils, my hair. My name tasted of mud when I replied, Jacob. I said my name was Jacob. It is Jacob no longer, he said. Now you are Israel. You have wrestled with God and with man. You have prevailed. That is the meaning of the name Israel. The sun's rim was just starting to show over the top of the gorge by the time I finally crossed the Jabbok. I staggered through the rocky shallows, one hip deeping dip with each new step and my head bobbing. It's the way I have walked ever since. From that day to this, I have moved through life like a cripple. When he gave me his blessing, he crippled me. A blessing and a limp. In these nine verses in Genesis, we are given a picture of God that is very different than most of us are used to. A picture that sounds almost frightening. What are we to make of a picture of God who comes at Jacob like an adversary in the middle of the night? Jacob liked having God's presence and blessing on his terms. So long as God fit right into his agenda and schedule, took care of him in ways he wanted to be taken care of, then he would claim God as his own. So what do we make of this story? How is this story of God our story? I want to suggest to you that this is really a story about grace. How so? Granted, it is not the grace that we tend to envision, that sweet, amazing grace that nudges us along softly and tenderly. We like that kind of grace. It's unobtrusive and not too demanding. It's the kind of grace that makes us feel safe and comfortable. But the grace that grabbed hold of Jacob is a fierce, rough, tumbling kind of grace. It is a grace that pursues us and wrestles us to the ground, locking us into a wounding hold. What am I talking about here? I'm talking about a grace that comes disguised in the form of unwelcomed intrusions in our life, disruptions, struggles, and disappointments. Things that blindside us and knock us flat on our back, fighting for life. This is a grace that hurts and leaves us limping afterward. But it also leaves us blessed, changed, transformed, and that makes it amazing grace nonetheless. I am not suggesting that God is behind every experience of pain and struggle in our lives. That would be oversimplifying things and trivializing the real pain of those who suffer. And sometimes the struggle in our lives is the result of poor choices. What I'm suggesting is that God is in every experience of struggle. God is present with us, holding and embracing us, even when we're unaware of it. We can limp away with the assurance that by God's grace, even this experience, as dark as it may seem at the time, can be used for God's good, glory, and purpose. Beloved people of God, and so with this wonderful story about Jacob, whose name means heel grabber, he is grasped by a grace of a God who had something in store for him that was far more than he could ever imagine. When Jacob finally came face to face with his brother Esau, he was a changed man, not only in name, but also in character. and a limp to prove it. He was now Israel, he who strives with God and humans and prevails. But this prevailing only comes with surrender and obedience and trust. As we continue to wrestle with a God whose presence in our midst sometimes is much too close for comfort, let us cling to that same God for dear life and for dear death. Let us cry out the same words that Jesus cried out in surrender on the cross. Into your hands, Father, I commit my spirit. Amen.